Welcome to the 32nd episode of A Change of the Champs. My name is Ryan Lowe, and my goal is to educate listeners, especially young ones, on the issues in this world by interviewing different experts who can lead us into the charge for change. So as students, there are a few things that our textbooks teach us. At some point in our K-12 education, we learn about the three branches of U.S. government and how and why they were built to provide checks and balances. We learn about all these federal departments, the history of the Constitution, its supposed intent, and the change in progress that led to each of these amendments. But what we're not learning, however, is arguably what is most important. We're not learning about the inner workings behind the modern three branches and possibly the breaking down of checks and balances. Many of us are growing up believing that we can make change happen if we work hard enough, if we shout loud enough, and if we put actions behind these words. But change isn't black and white. There are many programs within the federal government that we do not learn about in textbooks or hear about in news. And as young activists who want to make positive changes, it's important to learn about these various programs that could potentially become our allies and help us move closer to our goal. So here to help us understand this really complex aspect of the government is Adriana Kosgrief. Like Ellen Niederhelman, Adriana was at the Harvard Chan Sea Change Youth Summit I attended, where she was a speaker talking about government programs and making change through policy. Adriana was a programs manager at the State Department for 11 years, giving her a perspective that very few in America have, a government insider. So, how are you doing today, Adriana?
I'm so great, Ryan. And let me say, thank you so much for inviting me. I am so pumped and so honored to be here.
I mean, your conversation at the summit was really interesting. So, I'm also really excited for today. Okay, so let's start with your work at the State Department, which you did talk a lot about us at Harvard. So to most of us seeking change, government programs seems very general and far from our reach. So what exactly are these programs and how do they work?
Oh, what a great question. Let me start by saying that what you said at the top of the show I thought was really salient in that I think, you know, unless maybe you grew up in the DC area or you have kind of family or friends that are in government, even though the US government is massive, it is a little bit, you know, not really that well understood outside of kind of the beltway, as they say. And for me, I grew up outside of New York. I'm a first generation American. I did not even think about federal service until I was already in law school. And I think I shared with y'all at the summit that for me, it was actually the 2008 recession that pushed me kind of in that direction. I was always thinking I'd work in a nonprofit. And it was because the government was hiring that I finally said, well, all right, let's look under the hood here and find out more about what government service really means. And I think to answer your question about programs, let me back it up by saying, when you learn about the three kind of parts of government, we hear a lot about the legislative, especially at the federal level, right? We hear a lot about Congress.
Yeah.
About how, you know, we're speaking today when a shutdown was imminent, you know, it's not working very well. We hear a lot about kind of the politics side, but that's just one of three. There's the judicial branch, which is relatively tiny, very important, but tiny. And really, when we're talking about programs, we're talking about that third branch, the executive, which I think most folks, I am putting myself in this bucket now, most folks think of the White House, but they kind of forget about all of the non-political folks kind of who implement the administration's policies, right? So when we talk about policies and programs, I'm doing a very simplified version of this. I'm sure people who teach this would be rolling their eyes. This is very much just the way I think about it. Kind of policies are a little bit political in that whoever's in power, whoever got voted in, is going to kind of set general direction on policy. We care about X, Y, and Z issues. Programs are where those issues become real in that it's usually about where how money gets spent, and how kind of decisions are made about federal regulations and rules and programs could be obviously money being spent on people. So things like Social Security, but can also be money spent on things like roads or infrastructure. So it really is about where policy ideas turn into real tangible things for people and for kind of the planet further to what we're talking about here.
So yes, these politicians, these people at the forefront, they can say whatever they want about what they believe in, but program people in the back in the executive branch, as you're saying, they're the ones actually making this happen.
Yeah, there you go. And it's not as if that, everything is kind of signed off on by folks that have been voted in, right? It's not as if there's kind of nameless, faceless, robots just deciding. It's all in line with whatever the administration's policy is at a given time. But there are actual, human people, just wonderful people who are then on the back end saying, okay, so let's say we really care about, I'm going to use climate change as a as an example. I know that the president just came out with a relatively new executive order around making sure that we're thinking about environmental justice as the there's all these investments in green energy and infrastructure. Who's actually figuring out how we're going to do that? That's what we're talking about today. These are folks who work for government trying to figure out, all right, we know we want to do X. How do we actually do that? What will that look like on the ground? Who will we need to partner with? What will it cost? What will it really take? What kind of capacity do we need to build in our partners, in nonprofits, in civil society, in, even just things like the media? What kind of things will we need to do across the spectrum of all of us trying to make this a better place to live, What are all the ways that we can get at this policy imperative?
That's all truly different than what we learn in school, which is government belief, it's done.
Oof. Yeah, I wish. No, not quite.
Yeah, so you worked on these programs for 11 years. So are there any that you're particularly proud of? And what did you specifically focus on when developing these programs?
Oh, great question. So I was working not on climate change stuff. I was working on criminal justice, basically, for countries overseas. So this was a part of the State Department that is called International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs. But what they really do is rule of law programs all over the country. I mean, sorry, all over the world. And the idea is there's a kind of benefit to both the United States and other countries when we work on kind of transnational crime, building up justice sectors across the justice sector, not just police or not just courts, but also civil society or legal aid. And I loved it because at the time I was hired, I worked on Afghanistan, where there we were really, the US and its allies were really working on trying to make kind of the government in Afghanistan be able to kind of implement the rule of law on their own. It was a very interesting thing, much longer conversation than a 30-minute podcast in which I have lots of thoughts. But it was very interesting in that 11 years, so 9 of which I spent doing these kinds of programs, where, let's use the example that I used before, the kind of higher ups, the mostly folks who are coming out of the administration, folks who are political, would tell us, hey, let's use Afghanistan as an example. In Afghanistan, we want to build the rule of law, and here's why. Then my office, right? People on my team, people at the embassy in Kabul would work on, okay, what does that look like in practice? That requires a lot of talking to Afghans, talking to Af talk, pardon, talking to allies, talking to folks in the US who are experts in this, thinking about international development as a practice, bringing a lot of humility to it. Obviously, again, longer conversation on Afghanistan, but I also worked on Ukraine. This was from 2013 to 2016 when they experienced their revolution. At the time, it was probably the coolest thing I'll ever work on in my life. Another great example there was the new government came to us and said, we really want to work on corruption. We want to kind of really rethink our military, our pardon, our police. It was the kind of the political folks, right? The folks in the White House saying, okay, we want to support that. Yes. And here are the kinds of things we want you to be thinking about as we do that. But it was me and my team going, all right, well, what does that actually look like? Let's work on legal aid. Let's set up a new anti-corruption bureau. Let's help them rethink their police and their hiring. Let's try and get 50% women. Those kinds of details was me and my colleagues, right? It was the way I said it to you folks in at Harvard a couple of months ago. It kind of stands. It was surprising and amazing that it's just regular old people trying to do good things that are in government and bringing in the kind of, I used the word before, but like the humility of there is no perfect way of doing this. Let's try and figure out the best way. And that is something that I think when applied to kind of the challenges in the climate space, I really want young folks like you who are really motivated and know about advocacy and know about politics to be thinking about programs too. Because whether you're inside government or not, government brings a lot of tools to bear. Those regulations and that money that we talked about earlier are not insignificant. And I think thinking about government, either from inside or outside, as a partner in this, I think is just one of those tactics, I guess, that we're going to need to be thinking about this holistically and not just from one any side of this problem.
Yeah, and while you what you're calling normal people. You guys still went over there and like helped with criminal justice reform, which is such an important part. So clearly programs can make a lot of change. And you're definitely right. Youth activists need to be at the forefront. Like it's such a huge aspect of, at least in America, of American government. So why aren't we talking about this a lot?
And I think part of it is that, you know, it's an opaque seeming process to get in, right? We talked about that with some of the students a couple of months ago around, you know, you have to go through this Byzantine seeming system. And, you know, it's not just they put up a job, you apply for it. You know, many of the ways to get in require taking a test, like the Foreign Service exam or the Presidential Management Fellowship, which is the way that I got in. You know, it's a bit more, right? It's a bit less straightforward. And I think also there is that aspect of if you're not in DC, it's just less a part of your life, right? There are activists all over the country, but there aren't federal government folks as much. I mean, I'm sure my friends in, for example, Department of Interior or any of those other organizations that are all over the country would be shaking their heads at me right now. But many, let's put that, federal government jobs at least, tend to be in DC. And therefore, if you're not there, it feels kind of out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you talked a lot about how like a politician from one party who is currently in office is the one who dictates the generalness of what programs they're making.
Right.
But you also talked about at the Harvard program, how this doesn't, like the politics of it doesn't really affect you as much. So how partisan are these programs? How are they funded? How does the younger generation gain knowledge and access to these?
Okay, well, I'm actually going to start with the last part first, because I think it's so important. The way the younger generation gets knowledge and access is already, obviously, through school is a great way. So if you focus on policy, either in, you know, college or grad school, that is a great way to get a sense of how things are going on. I am such a big fan of internships, especially now that Congress is putting more funding towards paid internships to make it more kind of accessible to all of us, myself included. Like, I couldn't take free internships. I was working. And I think it really helps to be able to allow more folks to really be looking at this. So I encourage any kids listening, look at federal and state and local government internships, because it's a great way to get a sense of kind of how these questions are answered on in the field, in real life, in the offices across the country. So to the first part of your question, we were talking about how, you know, I was not very high up, right? I was kind of a mid-level manager. How's that? And day to day, absolutely, from administration to administration, policies change, no question. For example, I was there between the changeover from Barack Obama to Donald Trump. That absolutely, there were differences in the way that those two presidents thought about foreign policy. However, in terms of the day-to-day operations of our programs, many more than I think folks understand are actually bipartisan. And I think part of the reason that I liked the executive branch in a way that I don't think I would have liked the legislative is that I almost think of, oh my gosh, this is going to be such a cheesy analogy, but like, okay, if the government is a big lake, the politics are like the rippling waves on the very, very top. And that's the big talking and the, you know, the other side's evil and this is horrible and that's horrible. But when you get kind of, I don't know, like the 6 inches below the surface, really, you know, most folks working in government are in agreement on, we're trying to not ruin the planet. We're trying to, you know, move us in the right direction. We're trying to implement the will of the American people, right? Like, there's just much more consensus and far less, I'm going to use the word turmoil, at the working level than I think our media makes it seem. At least that was my experience in the 11 years that I spent at the State Department.
So there are waves and you're like fish and seaweed.
There we go. We're just rolling around like seaweed, man. You know, it's great.
That's great. So let's shift gears a little bit and talk about youth activism. So there's certain idealism that if youth mobilize and protest, advocate, write, educate, all that type of stuff, change can happen. But as I'm learning, it isn't that easy to make legally binding, especially change. So those who have the power to actually change things, they don't exactly want to listen to us at the bottom picketing. Mm-hmm. So what is your advice to young activists about this long road ahead?
I love that. Let me say, I think the most straightforward answer to that question is, oh my God, vote. vote, 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 vote.
Of course.
Because you'd be yelling at a wall. If the wall doesn't agree with you on an environment, you can lobby and yell and pick it all you want. If they don't agree, they don't agree. So I think there's a lot about voting in at every level, right? Local elections, state elections. It's not just about voting for president. Oh my God, it's everything else. I think you're trying to vote in folks that represent youth, right? That represent the diversity of this country, that represent the opinions and the beliefs of the activists that we're talking about. I think that is probably, maybe that's 95% of what I'm talking about. The other 5% is, I'm using some really cheesy analogies today, but roll with me today. You know, it's like trying to get across a massive playground, right? You're trying to get to the other side. You got to try everything, right? You got to go over, under, around, maybe do a flip. You know, we can't just say it's not only activism. It's not only voting. It's not only, you know, long game politics. It's not only policy. It's kind of, we need all of it. It's all so interrelated. It's all needed. The picketing is as important as the voting is as important as showing up when there's going to be a vote, as, you know, meaning like if they're about to vote on something that we care about, show up at the state house, right? That kind of advocacy that it as it interacts with legislature, which as it interacts with, you know, lawmaking and rulemaking, to your point, the legally binding aspects of all of this. We need more young and, you know, BIPOC lawyers. You know, we need more folks that are just in this fight from any way that kind of appeals, right? Not everybody's going to be into activism. Not everybody's going to be into government. I mean, I remember one of my best friends, she and I graduated from law school at the same time, and we laughed because she went into kind of advocacy nonprofit work and I went into government, and we laughed. It was like, we pick the route that fit our strengths, right? But both of us are working on the same issues, just from different perspectives. And I think it's worth, especially when you're young, being open to figuring out all different ways of getting at the same kind of underlying change that you're trying to make.
Of course, there nothing can be done if there isn't something happening from all angles. Exactly. Ooh,
exactly.
So, okay, this is quite the question. Looking ahead at presidential elections in 2024, there are several climate change denying, anti-women's rights, anti-LGBTQ, anti-dreamer Republican candidates. What do you think is the best way for those of us who are not old enough to vote, as you were saying earlier, but care deeply about the direction of the country and the world, to help ensure that, in America at least, we elect someone who will not turn us backwards?
My God, I think the most important thing is to be engaged in any way and help in any way, even before you can vote yourself, right? So, you know, encouraging your friends that are old enough to vote, participating in campaigns or in local election work, right? Any engagement, I think, is better than saying, well, too young, can't do anything, I'm just going to sit here, right? Like, any action, I think, is going to be helpful, even frankly, in terms of your own feeling of hope, you know? And I think, you know, one of the nicest things about not being in government anymore is that I can say things like, oh man, I just really hope that young folks are engaged and participate in this next election so that the backsliding that you're talking about does not come to pass, because that hurts all of us.
Just curious, what stopped you in the government from talking about hope and that type of stuff?
Oh, it never, you're always allowed to talk about hope. I wasn't saying that. Here's a good way of talking about the issue from before, circling back to that. In government, you really don't talk about politics at work, right? You really are not sitting there going, all right, I want everybody to be voting for Barack. You know, you really are talking about, we are all, you know, we all take an oath of office to uphold the Constitution. You are, you know, you're there as a nonpartisan civil servant. So if I was still at the State Department, I probably wouldn't be sitting here being, come on, telling you about which party I agree with. However, it is nice, I will say, and part of the reason I was kind of happy to be out of the DC and the political world, even though it didn't affect my day-to-day, there is something to be said for being able to vocally and loudly kind of yell about which candidates you love. Feels very freeing.
Yeah. And I think one of the big reasons why people are so discouraged to work in government is because no matter what, no matter where you are, there's going to be people on the far left, the far right, everywhere on the spectrum. Yeah.
Right. So something that I used to talk about a lot when I was in law school, I'm sorry to interrupt, but there it takes all kinds, right? I did an internship at Human Rights Watch between my second and third year, and I loved it. What a great organization. And I remember thinking, do I want to work here or not? And I was going back and forth and back and forth. And by the way, there are some who think Human Rights Watch is centrist, by the way, but I'm just making a point here. I think there's being engaged. There's kind of taking a pure stance. There's being open to pragmatism and compromise, right? And I think everybody's somewhere on a spectrum, right? It's like, do you want only progress that is actually inclusive and right? Do you want incremental progress? Neither is right, right? They're both right, I should say, actually. And I think so much of it ends up being personal, right? Like, which fight emboldens you more? Which fight gives you more hope, to that word, right? Like, where are you going to feel more energized? Join that team. Goodness knows there's enough work for everybody to be doing across this work, everywhere on the playground, you know?
Yeah. So throughout our conversation, we've already talked about like many different departments of government. And yes. At Harvard, you talked about like there were what, 200 something?
Oh my gosh, so many.
There were a lot, right? And So how do each of these departments really play into this whole program work? Do they each get a say in this? Do they each have their own specialties? I mean, they do. Do they like?
No, what a great question. It's because it's not straightforward. So I have the slides open because I wanted to remember what the numbers were. So I'm glad you asked. I was trying to look it up. First of all, it probably says something that I had to put an asterisk next to. They're around 434 federal agencies, depending on how you count. Now, some of them are just like commissions, but there's a lot. And I remember looking up how many work on issues that arguably affect climate change. Again, this is like my kind of imperfect scientific, unscientific method, but 13 to 15. And each of those, you know, which is quickly Environmental Protection Agency, Department of Ag, Department of Commerce, Department of Energy, Department of Interior, Department of Transportation, we could keep going. Each of them get allocated a budget from Congress, right? Congress, reminder, those are all elected, duly elected people. They give basically power of the purse. They give money to each of these agencies to implement programs. Those programs, exactly what they look like, how they're done, how they're implemented. Congress gets some say. Kind of the executive branch is in charge. The kind of political folks at the top of any agency, of course, get a say, but they're implemented by just regular people who are usually split out into, you know, one office might run, let's just use an example, 5 to 10 programs. Right? Maybe there's one, it's called a program officer, who's in charge of one program, one nationwide program. Maybe it's you, Ryan, right? Like, you then would have your little budget. You would be told, okay, this program does X, Y, and Z. And then you would be kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like the steward of that program, right? Making sure it's duly implemented, making sure, you know, so much about government is about fairness and transparency. And it looks kind of, in practice, it looks a lot like making sure your I's are dotted and your T's are crossed, right? There's a way of doing it. You're making sure it's done right. But there's a lot of it that's, okay, how can we actually get at whatever the outcome we're looking for, right? And there is creativity and meaning in that. And there is a lot of listening. And there's a lot of partnering with folks inside and outside of government. And there's a lot of kind of collaboration and coordination with folks in the field, with activists, with local government, with folks across the interagency. It's very, here's a good way of saying it. I was surprised when I got into government at how people focused it was. I thought it was going to be very budget and contracts, but I was like, oh my God, it's humans. It's people. It's a lot of talking, right? It's a lot of trying to figure out what's going on. It's talking to folks locally. And for us, it was overseas, like talking to folks locally, figuring out what's happening, what needs to change, looking over the horizon, thinking strategically. A lot of using your brain, right, to try and do good.
Yeah, that is really great. I mean, another reason why people like don't want to go into the government area is because it seems to budget, money, everything like
right.
that.
Right. But and it's not. Yeah, of course, that's part of it. And we should also say for your listeners, that's part of the reason that you can have so much of an effect in government. Let's be honest about that. I mean, now right. I work consulting with nonprofits. I mean, some of the biggest nonprofits in this country don't come close to the level of resources that government can bring to bear to really in terms of affecting change. My goodness, it's hard to get anywhere close to that in the private sector or in the public, you know, in the nonprofit sector, right? It's a lot easier to affect lots of folks, lots of things from government just because of the size and the scope and, to your point, the money, right? So that's another thing to kind of bear in mind. Affecting change is a lot easier to do from that kind of seat.
Well, maybe nonprofits should start charging taxes too.
I could probably think of a few nonprofits that would be down for that for sure.
Of course. So, Adriana, you've been involved in so many different fields. So my last question is, what is next for Adriana Cosgrove?
Oh, what a sweet question. Well, I left the State Department sadly, but excitedly about 2 years ago, and I really wanted to start working domestically again. And my background from undergrad, which you know, was in organizational psychology, and I really love kind of making groups work well together. So organizational psychology was a real big interest of mine. And the nonprofit space for our conversation before law school, during law school, even during my time at State, I was a grant maker to many US and international nonprofits. So I really wanted to kind of get back into the domestic space. I've been working with a lot of organizations. My company is called Capacita, and we've been consulting with a lot of folks in the kind of criminal justice reform space. That's an interest of mine. And also in the climate and environment and conservation space, because I don't think you can kind of be a person in America today looking at the future and not caring about trying to do your part for that. So my team and I, my small but mighty team, we are really looking forward to continuing to working with organizations like that, trying to kind of bring our expertise and strategy and grants to helping them do their job better. It's something that I'm really proud of being able to do. And I hope we'll be able to keep doing it for a long time. Thanks so much for inviting me again, Ryan. It's such an honor to be here on your podcast.
I mean, Adriana, I just want to say thank you for being, well, first of all, a speaker at the Harvard program. And then, yeah, as we're talking about now, as being part of the podcast, I mean, this really is something I have not known much about. And I bet a lot of listeners have not known much about. And the more youth like me hear the inner workings from experts like you, the more we'll understand the many facets of change making, as we talked about, and help us make a real, actual use of our voice. And so I was very inspired by you during our summer talk. That's why I really wanted to talk to you here. And I know your words here are going to give my listeners this encouragement to fight for climate injustice. So thank
Yes.
you so much.
I hope that everybody comes out of this conversation just super pumped to go on the internet and look for internships. Thanks so much, Ryan.
Yeah, thank you so much, Adriana. That's it for the 30-second episode of A Change is a Chance. I hope you learned something, and I'll see you in the next episode.